Coming to you from various places around the world, this is the Global Exhibitor Podcast, the podcast designed to help exhibitors succeed internationally.
So many of the UK trade shows now, in terms of exhibitor numbers, they're decreasing. And the reason why people won't commit on site, or the reason why they're not rebooking, is because they're saying, I literally do not know the financial position my company is going to be in next year because I rely 30% on the European market.
Your host for the Global Exhibitor Podcast is Jeff Hanna, a designer, entrepreneur, business strategist, industry thought leader, and student of world cultures based in the United States. Here's your host, Jeff Hanna.
Well, hello everyone. We're broadcasting today from London with our special guest, Miss Chloe Richardson. Chloe is a linguist and a sales strategist within the exhibition and trade show industry globally. She speaks about five or six languages and teaches language. She also works in the exhibition and trade show industry, specializing in sales strategy, rebooking, sales team support, business development, client engagement, the customer journey, and process management. And she also does translation work on a pretty regular basis. Chloe's home base is in London, where she is today, but Chloe works in a diverse array of industries across the world, including Europe, North America, Russia, Eurasia, China, India, Southeast Asia, Africa, basically everywhere. Chloe holds a Bachelor of Arts degree in French and Portuguese from the University of Southampton in the United Kingdom. And a bit of secret about Chloe that I happen to know is that she spent a significant amount of her time working in the entertainment industry. She's a very talented vocalist, pianist, and actress. Chloe is just super talented, extremely articulate, and just fun to be around. You're going to really enjoy this interview. Chloe shares lots of great insights with us across this three-part series. We're going to be focusing on the importance of language in relation to travel and to the trade show and exhibition world in general. She will also be talking about cultural differences, travel tips, how to engage with strangers, how to create trust and respect, perceptions across borders, and developing a better understanding of the audience you're trying to reach or engage with. There's some really great stuff here. So let's get into part three of my interview with Chloe Richardson on the Global Exhibitor Podcast.
I want to talk a little bit about a few things Britain. This has to do with accent, but within the UK itself, you know, often for people from the US, I think we might recognize a British accent, but we might not know, oh, that you're from the north or the south or whatever. How easy is it for you to distinguish approximate regions listening to people from the UK to know kind of where they're from?
Oh, I mean, you would know within the first word, at least to the extent where you could categorize whether they were north, middle, or south. It might take a sentence before you could actually locate the city. But so easy. I think we've probably got as many accents as you guys have, but over a much smaller geography. Yeah. And so actually, some of them are really distinguished. I think, you probably know about Scottish accent, right? And do you guys find that difficult to understand?
Yes, at times. It depends, but yeah.
I mean, me too. I can't understand a Glaswegian person. They would have to speak really slowly. But when people meet me for the first time, they're always a little bit, because I obviously was brought up in Yorkshire, but actually I moved when I was 18 and kind of lived obviously everywhere else. So my accent now is probably what you guys might call sort of standard British, perhaps. But when I go home, Jeff, my accent reverts into what it used to be, and no one in the south of England would be able to understand what I was saying. So you have to know your audience, I think, when you speak. So, accents is really big, really big thing here.
Could you explain what it means to go to public school? Are there efforts made in school, in different levels of school, where you come out and you should have a certain accent or dialect, if you will, which says something about who you are?
So I think the general sort of stereotype, so a public school is obviously a private fee-paying secondary school.
Which is contrary to what you would think, because if we say public school here,
open to the public, right?
Right.
Yeah, I know.
Public school is a private school.
Yeah, okay. So public school is a private school, and a state school is a school that you don't pay for, but then you've also got a grammar school. Do you guys know what that is over there? Yeah, so we kind of
we don't use that term as much, but like my parents' generation used that terminology of grammar school.
Fine. Yeah, so we don't have as many grammar schools as we used to. I don't know of any up north, actually, but there are quite a few down south. So a couple of people I went to university with went to a grammar school. But the idea of sort of a private school or a public school is kind of, the assumption is if you went to a school like that, then you're obviously going to be well off. And also, I think people assume perhaps that your intelligence level may be slightly different. And the assumption would also probably be that you would maybe be a bit more sheltered. Would be the stereotype. I went to a state school. I now know a lot of people who went to both public schools, boarding schools, grammar schools. And actually, I think, yeah, it probably defines who you are a little bit when you first leave the school system. But once you're in university, you all end up coming out at the same place. It doesn't define you, I don't think. But it does have that connotation. And it's quite similar to, we mentioned earlier about sort of perhaps the difference in attitudes to travel between the North and the South. It's quite similar with schools. So there's a lot more sort of private grammar schools in the South than there are in the North. But I would say the difference, so someone who goes to a private school up North and someone who goes to a state school up North, the difference between those would be larger than the two in the South, just because sort of the way that the education system is. But it's interesting. I mean, personally speaking, I would always probably send my kids, if I were ever to have any, to a state school, just because I think that it's important that you're not sort of giving everything on a plate. Not that that's necessarily what happens at a public school. I don't know. I've never been. But that's the impression that you get, is that life's perhaps a little bit easier sometimes. It's an interesting point. Do you have a similar kind of difference in the US, or do they exist?
Well, we have private schools or public schools, you know, and the large majority of people go to public schools, which are state or county funded sort of schools. Generally, you have elementary, middle, high school. There are private schools and there are now charter schools, and there are some Christian schools and different other kind of religious schools as well. And some are more focused on that particular religion versus the privacy part of it, but they're ones you have to pay to go to and tend to be a little bit more, I guess, exclusive in the one way or another, but not necessarily are they dealing with dialects or anything like that. It's more focused on what you're studying and the kind of content that you're focused on.
I met somebody quite recently who was born and raised in Newcastle, if you've heard of that, and that's up north in England. They've got a very strong accent, but she didn't have an accent whatsoever, and that's really rare. And I sort of said to her, why do you not have a Geordie accent? That's what we call someone from Newcastle, as a Geordie. And she said, oh, my parents wanted to knock that out of me when I was younger so I'd be more employable. Interesting, because I genuinely think in this day and age, surely it's not about the accent we use, but it's about the content of what we're saying. And you know what? Sometimes when I'm out and about, especially in work, sometimes I will put on more of a Yorkshire accent, because actually I think it makes you more relatable when you've got your roots are visible. And it makes you seem a bit more human when you've got a bit of a twang. I can obviously hear in your accent, Jeff, that you're Southern originally. Yes. But there are some parts of the US I cannot distinguish between at all. Like, I've got family in Chicago and I have family in California, and I cannot tell the difference between their accents whatsoever.
Yeah. Well, that's why I'm asking, because, you know, we can typically, but I've tried to work on my Southern drawl for a long time, and it's not as pronounced as it used to be years ago. I'll tell you that now, but it hasn't gone away all the way. Now I'm living in the Midwest. It's funny, even here, there are some people in the Ohio Valley region that have more Southern drawl than I do, who are from Kentucky and places like that. So it's interesting. You know, I do think that having a British accent in the U.S. is quite an intriguing thing. People immediately tend to perk up and listen more. And when we were doing sales, when I worked for a Dutch company that you're familiar with, I would bring people over from the Netherlands and we would walk the show floor together and let them speak first, because if they have a Dutch accent or some European accent, it would give you a little like 20 seconds more time before you get shut down. I personally think people might listen a little bit longer to hear what you have to say, you know, depending
I think I can see that for sure. I can't think of a single negative reaction I've had in the US in a sales context from sort of the outset, just because they recognize immediately the fact that I'm British. And I think some people have even said to me that because I'm British, it makes me sound more sincere and more intelligent with what I'm saying. So they want to listen to it more, which is crazy, because in Britain, they see my accent as not a very intelligent one. So it's kind of funny the difference of perspectives.
If I can just ask you to comment a little bit about what's going on with Brexit and what impact do you think that might have on business relations and the economy and all of that?
Yeah, I think Brexit, I remember the day 3 years ago when I was in Sweden, actually, when the result came out, and I had campaigned quite heavily, and I'm not ashamed to say it, for Remain. For me, as soon as I heard that this was even an issue, my first thought was, if we leave the EU, they're going to take away my freedom. And after everything we've talked about, obviously on this podcast, I'm sure you can understand that to me, the most important thing is that I have freedom to travel and freedom to see the world. And as far as I could see, this was somebody closing the door to a wealth of knowledge and culture and experience and adventure. And when the result was announced, I was absolutely heartbroken. I felt like whomever voted to leave had done it based on something that actually wasn't that well delivered, or even wasn't even honest. And I felt like it was done with a lot of sort of propaganda behind it. And I was gutted, and I have remained gutted for the last few years. And the closer, obviously, we were supposed to come out at the end of March, and that hasn't happened. And the longer it goes on for, the more hopeful I am that, in fact, we may never leave. It's already sort of thrown in a few things about European citizens who live here and have worked here for sort of the last 20 years. They're now not knowing whether they're going to stay. And obviously the effect it's had on business is crazy. I mean, up where I live, actually, my neighbours voted 85% to leave because they were saying things about job security, things like that. And immediately after, three huge players in the corporate industry decided to take their factories away from the UK and put them in Poland instead, because it was more secure and more stable. And I just think that's kind of, that epitomizes everything. We're so scared in the UK sometimes, because we're an island, we're so scared of change and scared of things being different to what they were 100 years ago. But actually, that's the way that the world is, and the world develops, and we're going to mix languages and we're going to mix cultures, and that's what the world has always been like. We're just a big melting pot of human beings. But I think people's perceptions of what Brexit was about was slightly blinded by this issue of immigration. And in terms of what it's going to do for business, I think it's going to be diabolical, not only for British exports, but also actually doing business in Europe. I've done quite a few shows in France over the last few months, and every single person is asking me, no matter what department they work in, no matter which company they work for, they're saying, oh, what do you think about Brexit? And they're saying that they don't feel comfortable investing in British business or buyers at the moment because they don't know what's happening. It's not even the fact that we're leaving. It's the fact that nobody actually knows what's going on. And I just wish with all my heart this whole thing would have been avoided right from the start. And it puts, especially in the trade show industry, so many of the UK trade shows now, in terms of exhibitor numbers, they're decreasing. And the reason why people won't commit on site, or the reason why they're not rebooking, is because they're saying, I literally do not know the financial position my company is going to be in next year, because I rely 30% on the European market, and I don't know if that's going to exist next year. So I can see from everyone's perspective, it's quite terrifying. And if we were to really leave properly and leave with no deal, as people are bandying about that expression, I would seriously look into my options with leaving the UK, because I think closing off the rest of the world, and I know obviously Donald Trump came over recently and said that he would make sure we're one of the biggest trade partners of the US and things like that, and that's brilliant. But actually, I think it's important we don't forget our neighbours who are an hour away, who have been our trade partners for many, many years. It'd be great to do trade with everybody, but it looks like at the moment that we are closing those doors to our immediate neighbours, and that's really sad. And I think it's not going to have a positive effect for anybody, actually. And a lot of businesses in every industry that I've been in, from finance to tech to gift shop. You know what? A lot of B2C shows that I've been doing, who specialize in hobbies or crafts are absolutely terrified because they send all of their, say, their workshop packs to people who do sewing classes in the UK. And they're saying, if we're going to have to pay an extra export tax on that, then that's a market we just can't deliver. And this is French knitting companies. It's like the amount of people that are being affected, it's phenomenal. And it's such a shame.
Thank you for sharing. I'm going to leave you with this last question, if you will. Okay. What is your favorite city or country, and what is it that you like so much about it?
Gosh, that's the question. Okay. So can I give two?
You can give two. Knowing your breadth of experience, I'll give you two.
Okay, thank you. So they're both very different, and actually they're polar opposites, and that's probably why they complement each other so well. And it's quite controversial, being the history that these two particular countries have. So my first one I'm going to go with is New Orleans. I think that that city is the most welcoming, the most vibrant, the most culturally enriched place I've ever been. I went there, I landed, I fell in love, and I spent 3 days basically just walking around. And I just found the people of NOLA to be incredible. And it's sort of next, I really want to go back there really soon. And for the trade industry as well, they've obviously got a great convention center there. So I think after everything that happened all those years ago with Hurricane Katrina, it's so nice to see that it's managing to build itself back up again, which is no mean feat. I think it just says a lot about the spirit of the people in New Orleans. So that's number one. And number two, I'm going to go all the way to Eastern Europe, and I'm going to go to Moscow. Moscow has very bad press all over the world. And the first time I went there, I was really apprehensive. I ended up probably staying out there for about 3 months last year, all in all. And once you understand that the Russian people are, they seem colder, they may seem more abrupt, they are incredible. They are so warm in their own way. The country of Russia is just so full of a unique history that no other country in the world can boast. The food is different. The architecture is beautiful. I mean, again, I could just run around Moscow. I was actually marathon training last time I was there, and just running around the city. And there's just so much to see and so much to do. And when it's nice weather, it's lovely. So yeah. When it's cold, obviously it's like minus 30 and you think you're going to die. But I think the two cities, New Orleans and Moscow, for me, are kind of both brilliant. And they're both upcoming in the trade show industry. I mean, trade shows in Russia are huge at the moment. The football is high. People are investing. And they say, obviously, Russia is sort of the next up and coming economy. So, the two together. I'm sorry, I cheated.
Oh, no, it's fine. And the train stations are incredible, right?
Beautiful. Ornate. And yeah, honestly, the history in Moscow is incredible. I've never been to St. Petersburg, but people say it's really worth going. But there's a lot less trade show action going on down there. But honestly, some of the places in Moscow are just, I'd highly recommend it for anyone that's thinking about it. And also, don't believe everything that you read in the papers about Russia. All is not as it seems from a Western perspective. So I'd recommend it.
It's been a pleasure, Chloe, having you on the podcast today. So thank you for joining us.
No, thank you, Jeff. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you. And hopefully we'll get to talk a lot more in future. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This has been part 3 of a 3-part interview with Chloe Richardson on the Global Exhibitor Podcast. If you haven't yet listened to parts 1 or 2, please be sure to check those out as well. If you want to reach out and connect with Chloe, you can find her on LinkedIn, Chloe Richardson, or you can get her email address from our show notes here on the podcast.
We like to remind people that all business is conducted within the context of culture. So each episode provides insights to help marketers understand the cultures they're trying to reach and strategies for building bridges across cultural divides. If you like the Global Exhibitor Podcast, please share it with others, subscribe to it, and rate it on iTunes. We greatly appreciate the feedback. Please also check out our website and blog at www.globalexhibitor.com. And finally, if you or someone you know would make an interesting guest on this podcast, please let us know by sending an email to guest@globalexhibitor.com. And until next time, thank you for listening.